The views and opinions expressed by guests on the TWBC podcast are solely those of the guest and do not necessarily reflect the views of nor constitute an endorsement by the host, TWBC, or the advertisers.
National championships, Confederation championships, World championships, major professional events. For over three decades, he has been there for many of the sport's greatest moments. And now he brings you even closer to the movers and shakers in the world of high echelon tournament water skiing. From the founder and creator of the Water Ski Broadcasting Company comes the TWBC Podcast. And now here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all, and this is the latest edition of the TWBC Podcast. I am the aforementioned Tony Lightfoot, and this has been recorded prior to day five of the IWWF World of Water Ski Championships from Sunset Lakes, and one of the proprietors of Sunset Lakes is the world-famous water ski coach, Jack Travers. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine. We're getting down to the very end of this wonderful, wonderful world championships.
Excitement or relief at this point?
A little bit of both, I think. Yeah.
All right, then. So, tell us a little bit about the process of actually getting these championships in the first place. Because after some of the previous world championships were hosted in sites that weren't particularly conducive, I'm guessing they changed their direction and they looked towards you to host these championships. Kind of give us a little bit of a backstory on that.
Well, it was pretty much financially impossible for us to do it the way the system was in the past, but Jose Antonio came up to me and explained that he'd like to set up a situation where it would be not so costly for us. They would actually rent the site and provide a lot of the help running the tournament. So it made it financially possible and a situation where we felt like we could take on the job.
And obviously there are a number of considerations, finances aside. I mean, we're still in the midst of a worldwide pandemic, so there were obviously a few competitors and countries that weren't able to attend, but the wild card situation really opened up the competition, and some of the performances, you know, have really ratcheted up as a result.
Yeah, it's true. I think they increased the independent numbers up to 25, where they were down around 10 or 12, I think, in the past. So we it brought in a fair amount of skiers. We had over 200 skiers in this competition.
Excellent stuff. So let's go back a little bit into storied history a little bit. I mean, let's talk about you more. Moreover, you've been involved in this sport well. For what would appear to be donkey's years. I mean, all the way back, I would say, to about the 1960s, early part of the 70s. Kind of give us a little bit of your backstory about your involvement in the sport and how you and Lalani and the rest of your family got to this point.
Well, I moved down from New Hampshire, I guess it was 1971, applied for a job at Jim McCormick Ski School. At the time, all I really wanted to do was get involved in the sport. Jim really didn't feel like I had the qualifications to start coaching, and rightfully so. I mean, I was a rookie skier, but willing to work hard, and he gave me a rake and had me go to town with the gopher jobs, and eventually I got a chance to ride and start driving in the boat and driving for Jim when he was coaching people like Wayne Grimditch, Paul Seaton, Ricky McCormick. Some of the team members back then, Christy Freeman, Christy Lynn Weir, they were all in attendance at Jim's ski school. So I acquired a bit of knowledge just driving the boat and listening to how Jim coached.
Yes, indeed. And Jim McCormick ran his ski school. You know, he retired some years ago. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us. And he's a recent inductee into the International Water Ski Hall of Fame. I mean, just give us a little bit of a sense of how much he impacted your life, you know, when he brought you on board, you know, because, I mean, the contributions he's made has been pretty much immeasurable.
Yeah, Jim was a great coach. He was quiet on the side, but when you got him in the boat and you had him coaching people, it was he was a wealth of knowledge, just something you can't compare to anybody else at the time.
All right, then. And you also mentioned a good friend of yours, Paul Seaton, who competed for Great Britain for a number of years, had to retire after 1975 due to a knee injury, which today would be relatively easy to fix. But back in those days in the 1970s, you know, that basically spelt the end of your athletic career. I mean, you struck it off pretty well when you got involved with coaching him and what have you. And that friendship has really sustained all the way through to today, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. It's been a great ride with Paul. He actually came out and started coaching with me after his retirement from competitive skiing. We worked together several times. He invited me over to Thor Park to do a coaching clinic with him. And we just stayed close. Him and his wife, Margie, and Lanai and myself meet every year down in Key West and reunite and talk about old times all the time.
You mentioned Lalani. You're basically your partner in crime, your right hand person. You know, that's involved in running this site and keeping everything on an even keel. Tell us a little bit about her and how you met up and then formed this fantastic partnership that has really helped you through the good times and the bad times. You know. In here at Sunset Lakes, you know. Yeah.
She was actually a school teacher in Groveland, and my first when we first started up international tournament skiing, we were in our mobile home park just about 2 miles from here as the crow flies, and she was it was renting one of the mobile homes there, and we met up and just kind of hit it off, and from the rest is history. But actually, in truthfulness, if it wasn't for her hard work and dedication, this event never would have been possible.
Of course, and I mean, you established your ski school on a couple of lakes. I mean, I remember way back in the day, in like the late part of the 1980s, you actually had two lakes which were nowhere near as sculpted and perfectly formed as your site is today. Give us an idea of the challenges there, because, I mean, you had to fight off like reptiles and all that kind of stuff just to make sure it was safe enough for people to go out there and ski, right?
Yeah, there were a couple of lakes not very far from here. Just we actually moved the facilities from that site over to here when we first started. There were two private lakes. One was pretty good ski lake. The other one was a little bit, let's say, primitive. But we were able to trick on the one lake and slalom and jump on the other, and we were also tricking on Lake Harris. So we had a routine where skiers would come out in the morning. Half of them would come to the slalom and jump lake, and the other half would stay on Lake Harris and trick, and then we'd rotate in the afternoon. But it was hard work, and eventually the owner of those lakes, I was able to purchase his property from, and we started out with a peat mine. We drug all the peat out of here. A company called Reliable Peat paid me a royalty while we were making the payments to the farmer, and we just kind of worked at it, and it was a work in progress, and it took us about 10 years to develop these lakes, actually.
Oh, nice. And, I mean, you've developed it into a wonderful facility, not only the original Sunset Lake, which has been the venue for the slalom and the jump events, but Lake Sarah behind us and Lake Grace over there. The naming of those lakes, significant?
Yes. Lake Sarah was actually the name of this dried-up lake bed where it is today. Sunset was, obviously, if you're out here about 7 o'clock at night, you'll see a beautiful sunset. There was a gorgeous one last night, and Lake Grace was named after my mother.
All right, then. So we're coming up to the end of the World Championships. You've organized the tournament. You and Lalani, you're bringing in all these people across the world. And you're on site. You're doing this. You're doing that. You know. You. How do you set time time for yourself to actually look up and see what's going on the water and track like skiers, like your own son, a JT, you know?
Yeah. It's not easy. You just have to pay attention to what's going on and see the people that you want to see. You know, we've had a tremendous amount of help from our homeowners, and my sons, Chris and John, have been an extremely important part of this event, dedicated themselves the last 2 months to get this site ready, and I hope everybody's been pleased with what they've seen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the feedback that I've gotten from a whole bunch of people has been absolutely, absolutely top-notch. And I mean, we're coming up to the end of the World Championships, you know, and I mean, we've had some great performances, and there's still some, and I mean, the story is yet to be fully written, and I mean, there's so much technology involved in the sport. Let's go back a little bit in time, you know, from in your era, which is the 1970s when you started, because I mean, people at that time, the jump skis were about 66 inches long. I mean, what were your coaching techniques like back in those days to be able to get distances from jumpers with those relatively short jump skis?
Well, it was difficult. They were actually, when I started coaching, excuse me, at Jim McCormick's, they were only wooden jump skis, and actually Wayne Grimnitch was sent a pair of composite structure skis from Roger Teeter. And everybody kind of laughed at them when, you know, because they were light and fast and a little bit difficult to control when you're used to heavier pieces of wood under your feet. But that's where it all started. Give credit to Roger and Dave Saucier to come up with the technology to build fiberglass skis.
And how much is your site now involved in the research and development in a lot of the future technologies that we see today?
Well, we get a lot of calls from manufacturers. Perfect Pass came down here for about 2 months when speed control first came into play, and spent a lot of time developing. We have HO here all the time doing clinics and testing skis. And we've worked in the past with Denny Kidder and Pat Conley. It's just been it's been great to be involved in it, and it's been an honor to be associated with those people.
Now, obviously, we look towards jumping because, I mean, probably the vast majority of the world's top jumping athletes have come and have trained at this facility. Let's talk about slalom a little bit, because I mean obviously JT is here all the time, and then you've got the likes of newly crowned world champion Jamie Ball, and then you've got medalist Will Asher as well. So how has R&D worked out on this particular facility over the years?
Well, a couple of times a year, HO will come out with several of their skiers, and we'll do some testing and training. They'll cut up and drill and grind on skis and try to figure out what the best product is. And every year that's something new, but it's something better.
And tricks as well, because, I mean, way back in the day, some of the world's finest trick skiers plowed their trade here and got up to high echelon levels. Tell us a little bit about trick skiing and the impact upon that discipline from the activities here.
Well, I think a lot of the increase in the performance and the trick skis has really come from the skiers themselves, the youth out there. It's just incredible how much they've shown in this particular tournament. You know, we have some record holders out there that are being pressed pretty hard by some young skiers. So I don't see a whole lot of difference in the design of the trick skis. I just see a big difference in the techniques that skiers are coming up with to push the limits on you know, the flips that are being done and the toe tricks. It's dedication from an early age.
All right, you've been involved in the water ski school game for nearly 50 years now. I mean, do you have any interesting stories to share in amongst those times since the 1970s? I see you have a little bit of a grin on your face.
Well, there's been some interesting stories. One in particular, we teach people when they learn to jump to go over the side of the jump, over the corner rather than over the top. And actually, Paul Seaton and I were in the boat, and we were teaching a youngster how to do this particular method. And after he went over the ramp the first time going over the corner, we turned around, we went back by the ramp, and it looked like he was trying to spray the side of the jump. We didn't think much of it. We took him back over. He went over the corner, went over a little higher, turned around, and we came back, and he actually went over the side curtain the opposite direction, thinking he was supposed to go both ways on the jump. There lots of interesting stories like that.
I mean, you get skiers from all over the world. I mean, some of the students that come into a ski school such as this, I mean, the international reputation that it has, you know, that sometimes there's a bit of a language barrier, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. In particularly with the Orientals, they're a really classy group of people. We had a lot of them during the spring breaks from college in Japan. And it's funny because you'll see that they always travel in pairs so that one of them can at least communicate. But the odd thing is sometimes that person is in the boat when you're coaching, and you'll coach the Japanese, and they'll always, when you know, you say, "Do you understand?" And they always say, "Yes, yes, I understand." But they do the same thing all over again.
Yeah. And you've also entertained skiers from places such as Russia and Ukraine, and in particular Belarus, where your daughter-in-law comes from, Natalia Bernikava. You know, so give us a little bit of a sense of how important she's into the mix here at ITS.
Well, she's heavily involved in coaching now. She really enjoys coaching, particularly the jump and the trick event. And she'll, we have to kind of get after her from time to time because she likes to keep the student out there longer than we can afford to do that. But it's all about them getting the right instruction and doing it often enough to where they really come down and learn the tricks that she's trying to get them to follow up on.
All right, then. We're going to round off the podcast right here. Thanks a lot, Jack. Now, I normally invite people before I round off the podcast to say give a big shout-out and thanks and what have you. So I'm going to give the mic over to you in order for you to do that. And so there you go.
Okay, well, I can't say enough about all the dedication and hard work and organization my wife has done to put these championships on. And, you know, like I said before, my two boys, Chris and John, have just worked their tails off to make this event happen. The last 2 months have been a dedication on their part, and I can't thank them enough. And our homeowners were really helpful.
Excellent stuff. You've been listening to Jack Travers. My name is Tony Lightfoot. This is the latest edition of the TWBC podcast. And until next time, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.